This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest this week, Esme Ballard. On this show, you know, we celebrate life's wonderful moments, we celebrate the more erudite moments, and also those bits where you want the ground to open up and swallow you. So, welcome, Esme.
Thank you, Joan. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for coming in. Now, Esme, you may be familiar with Esme's lovely landscapes of the West Wight, from where you take your inspiration. So, how long have you been painting, Esme?
Well, really, since early childhood, I found that it was very encouraged at my junior school, and I quickly found that I enjoyed drawing, so I took that up and did even calligraphy at A-level. But then I had a big gap in my painting experience. My career, I was so busy as a museum curator that in actual fact, I've only taken up the watercolour painting since early retirement and living here on the island.
So how long have you been painting this second kind of go?
Oh, 6 years since I moved here permanently with my husband David.
Yes. So why, when you were younger, was there a point at which you decided art wasn't going to be a career option, or how did that work?
Well, I had a very special moment when I was lucky enough in my lower sixth form, I should say, to go to the Tutankhamun exhibition in London.
Oh, yes.
That was a, what you call, a seminal moment.
Mm-hmm.
The objects were just so incredibly special and fascinating that I kind of felt the future for me was definitely museums and or art galleries. And I had this feeling that the power of objects to influence and inspire people was something that I definitely wanted to get involved with. So at that point, I wasn't sure quite what objects, or whether it would be objects or paintings. And even before that time, I'd got a sneaking feeling that art galleries, and paintings in particular, would be something that I would enjoy being around.
Oh, yes. So When you work in that environment, we're moving away from your paintings here, but when you work in that environment, do you, obviously you've got your white gloves, I assume, do you get to touch and handle these pieces?
Oh, yes, very much so. Conservation of paintings is its own sort of department. Mm. I saw something of that in my final job at the Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, which is a very large and very popular museum. But in my early days, when I started out, I was involved in telling the story of a town. So I had to research the entire history. I had various focus groups and consultation with groups in that community, which was actually in both St Helens and later at Tamworth, in Tamworth Castle. So interpreting the whole story of a town through objects is a fascinating thing to do. So you're looking in your collection as to what you've got, but at the same time, it's got to be a balanced representation, and indeed a very big responsibility. When I did the Tamworth Story exhibition, that was in Tamworth Castle in Staffordshire, where I was for the longest period of my career, it did actually win an award. It was from Award Interpret Britain.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's very interesting the way you say you use the objects in order to tell the story. So almost they became the illustrations, I suppose, as a narrative, a 3D narrative.
Very much so, yes. I mean, I worked, of course, in a team with external consultants, but I also enjoyed the writing part of it and found it relatively easy to commit to the word count, as they would call it. That's the number of words, writing succinctly.
So those tiny little things that are placed by the objects that explain everything, That was
your
job.
Yes, to put those and if together. You can imagine in an exhibition, all the showcases are linked together by text panels so that you have a clear introduction as to what this section is about, whether it, in Tamworth's case, it went from the Romans right up to the present day. And it was also fascinating, I found, when you talk to different groups, they all represented their own standpoint. So if you talk to an archaeologist, it would tend to be about things that are found in the ground, often many, many years ago. I mean, clearly things are found up to the present time, but often there was a focus on Roman or medieval finds. If you talk to, for example, to the chairman of the Friends Association, what came over there was very much a more personal interpretation, so that you have the nostalgia element of what we remember from our grandparents' front parlour, and you've got the classic cast iron plant, the aspidistra, and the heavy furnishings of Victorian times.
Were there any moments, and I can't imagine there were, because I imagine you were very, very thorough and competent and professional, but we all get those moments in life where someone or something completely throws us. So you're there with a group of, like you say, archaeologists or one of the Friends Society. Did you ever have a moment where somebody completely floored you with a question or a comment?
I'm sure that did happen, but as you were asking me that question, what came to mind was I was perhaps slightly surprised when I first started at Tamworth Castle that they had a haunted bedroom.
Ooh.
So I was required to talk to school children and indeed adult groups about the ghost. But we got round this in a clever way. She was a female ghost, because at that time it was sort of hologram effect was created by an external firm, and these have not been seen much outside London, so we were one of the first, I think, in the regions that you could effectively, I'm giving the game away here, but when the visitor stepped into the bedroom with its four-poster bed where the Lord Marmion of the castle was did something very naughty, and the ghost appeared to him to chide him in the middle of the night, that you could see this spectral figure through a gauze curtain of the bedroom.
That was terrifying, actually.
It certainly made the visitors jump. But I think it's always good to be able to go away from a visitor attraction having seen something rather unusual, so that you can that remains in your mind, as it has indeed mine, and you can go away and tell people, oh, they've got these extraordinary hologram.
Yes,
figures.
Wow. So presumably you never heard or saw anything that went bump in the night or even the day?
No, I confess I didn't.
that's... And what about people coming in and did anybody challenge what you'd done and say, well, I think you'll find that it wasn't this, it was that? Did you ever get a kind of complete know-it-all come in, or who knew nothing but decided they were going to put their two penneth worth in?
I've got a more recent example of that. I was, in fact, volunteering at the museum here on the island in the Guild Hall, which is an interesting introduction to the history of the whole island. And my thoughts there, I thought one of the labels was incorrect. So I gave them my opinion. But I was assured that the catalogue card said something quite different. So we kind of had to leave that as an impasse, because obviously I'm a volunteer now, so I can only put forward my thoughts and suggestions. But that's up to them what they do.
So you had to agree to differ.
We did on that one.
But you had many... That was your career, wasn't it? You were a museum creative manager, so you had a full-time, full-length career in that role, didn't you?
Yes, I did work full-time doing that for 34 years, and that was really... It was so busy and challenging, and often working outside of what we might think 9 to 5. You had to be available evenings, weekends. We had all kinds of events going on that I sadly didn't have time to continue with my great love of painting, which I think is in my blood.
When you saw the work, so you worked with art, pieces of art as well, presumably paintings and art in that role. So
yes.
When you were in that role of a curator and you were working with other kind of great works of art, did that make you long to do it? Did you feel that, why am I working with other people's art and not making my own?
No, because I think that my work was so stimulating and so busy that I was just kind of completely absorbed in delivering You know, it's an old-fashioned term, but I mean, I did think of myself as a public servant,
yes,
you know,
yes.
And I was always in local authority museums. So there are people out there really paying your wages, and you have to work hard to present something that is going to appeal to them, and they are going to enjoy and will come and see. And I did an enormous amount of work with all kinds of different media over that time, and we found that really, in a sense, we were almost mutually supportive. I'm thinking particularly of Tamworth Castle, where there was an excellent relationship with the local newspapers there in supporting what was going on.
And if you had to be really naughty and take one object, which one did you really want to own, that you all in that 34 year career, all the beautiful things you must have seen and handled, if you thought I covet that more than it above everything else, what would that be?
Well, I'm thinking of several, really. Can I have more than one?
You can, yes.
Oh, well, it sounds awful because I don't really believe in this. I was going to say, can I have all the Pre-Raphaelite paintings from the Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery? And there are just so many that are truly wonderful works, which I would urge anybody to pop up and see. I can't just pick a single one. The reason I say it's naughty is that I feel very passionately about the fact that great art, you know, should be shared and seen by as many people as possible, and not just kept hidden away
of
as
course,
multimillionaires yes. who are able to buy great works of art at incredible prices these days. And that is...
Then they're lost, aren't they?
They are lost.
The rest of us
yes.
minions.
Now, if I may say, Joan, this sharing has become part of why I decided not just to paint original works of art, but in fact to do limited edition runs of my work, quite limited, just 25 prints, in other words, of each of my paintings of the West White, because it is a means, admittedly, not, yes, I would like to sell them, but it's also a means of sharing my work, because a lot of people, friends, quite close friends, said, oh, we didn't know you did that, Esme. And it's been a kind of revelation to people. And if I am passionate and love the beautiful scenery in the West White, especially myself, then I would love more people to be aware of that as well.
So where can people see your work currently?
Currently, it's at the Ventnor Botanic Garden. Those are both framed works in their exhibition room, and unframed, so those are mounted prints in their shop. And the mounted prints are also available at the Visitor Information Centre, that's in the Guildhall in the centre of Newport.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And you had an inaugural sort of opening exhibition, didn't you? Was that last summer?
I did, yes. No, it was in the autumn. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my own exhibition. I was alongside many other artists, and that was at the shop up at Tapnall Farm. But
which is on the West White as well.
Yes, yeah. But my understanding is that has now closed. But it was very nice to start off there.
Okay, and when you paint, do you work, do you go out, you know, do you sit on the edge of the cliff top, for example, or do you paint from a photo? How do you work, Esme?
Well, there's nothing quite like sitting out on Tennyson Down. I have to say, overlooking Freshwater Bay is just, to me, perhaps almost the very best view in the world. And you do need to be there on a hot day, otherwise you'll end up getting cold, sitting in one spot. Because I find that just sketching what you see in front of you can take a couple of hours. So it was normally I do that just as a pencil study, and then I go home and would work up the colours from photographs, yes. But of course the other side of the cliffs are fantastic too, especially this time of year. I do urge people, if they haven't been up, that view is incredible too, when you look down onto the Stag Rock, and right in the foreground you've got the most beautiful thrift or sea pinks. Many people will know this, of course, if they've a love of the local flora and fauna, but at this time of year the pinks are magnificent.
It looks a little bit like clover, doesn't it? Sort of got, but it's
yes,
more magnificent in
that's
a way.
That's right.
And it completely, as you say, changes the clifftop coloured. It is beautiful. It is stunning.
Yes.
And both sides of the bay, you've got a view down in, well, the mouths of the caves that are there, haven't you?
So if you're looking up towards Fort Redoubt, which is on the very top of the cliff at the bay, and you've got the Pinks in front of you, you want to look that way at the white cliffs of Tennyson Down in the morning. And then if you want to get the best views of the bay from the Fort Redoubt side, or anywhere up on Tennyson Down up towards the monument to the former poet laureate, then that's best in the afternoon when the sun is falling onto the cliffs and you get that beautiful orange colour.
Lovely. So have you, you've got painting, you've got paintings of both views, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. And where else do you, I know that's one of your absolutely favourite spots, but where else do you take your inspiration from in that area?
Yes, I've done a painting that I was particularly pleased with of the view looking towards Tennyson Down, but from way back at Brook. So if you were on Brook Down, that also is an absolutely wonderful walk, and I do enjoy walking in this area, of course, as well. That has a patchwork of all the fields and the hedgerows. And, yeah, I was really satisfied with that. Another one that's been much admired is the boathouse at Newtown.
Oh, that's such a gorgeous spot, isn't it?
A lovely area that is so peaceful and beautiful, going across what were the old salt marshes.
You park up in a very small car park and you walk through and you go, if I'm right in thinking, you go down a little lane and through a gate, and you open the gate and you have no idea what's going to be the other side of it, and it just opens up onto heaven, really, doesn't it?
Yes, there are so many beautiful inlets too, so there are various ways, in addition to the area you describe at Newtown, there are other places from Shalfleet, for example, you can appreciate these the beautiful quiet setting, lovely trees, nothing on the horizon. It really is heaven.
And I think that's what your pictures, your paintings evoke, is that peace and that serenity, and almost talk of a time gone by. Because if you take the cars out of the West White, really there's very little hint, isn't there, in certain places of the landscape that give you any hint to the 21st or even the 20th century. I mean, it is just all very pastoral and scenic and coastal.
Well, it's very kind of you to say that about my pictures, but it is true. Apart from the fact that we've had a few landslips, but apart from that, certainly in the main, the scenery, certainly over the 6 years I've been here, is very little changed. There's something about this particular activity, painting and sketching and drawing, that means that you're, in order to do it, you have to be very patient and look for long periods of time. You have to study the trees, the clouds, of course, and it's amazing how when you are out in the fresh air, the changes in the light as time passes, different shadows, the sun moves round, and this can become an enormous challenge.
Yes,
in
indeed.
Terms of which colours do you choose? How do you get the shadow in the right place? And being aware of this, of course, is partly why I have confined the outdoor activity just to the pencil sketch and completed my pictures indoors. And I do it with a technique called layering. So it does take perhaps up to, 10 2-hour sessions, could be 20 hours involved in
one
coming
painting.
Back to it, yes. And it's not something that you can do more than about 2 hours indoors, otherwise you sort of get cramp, really, or give yourself a headache. So I'm very patient, I think, and I have other interests, so I keep coming back to it. And you layer the painting and you come back to it with fresh eyes, and then eventually you have to be careful not to overdo it.
Yes.
And spoil it.
It sounds like you find it very therapeutic.
I do. And I quite enjoy just concentrating on it on my own. So I'll be quite frank and say I am, to be truthful, a self-taught artist. Although when I was very young, I did go with my father, who went to a night school, and he was painting, and we did go out with a teacher into the countryside. And I also did go to night classes again before I went to university for figure studies, so that helped with the drawing, even though it was figures. And I was doing plant studies, still lifes, for my A-level an awful long time ago. But it's extraordinary, Joan, how these skills stay with you. If you've learnt how to draw, you understand perspective, it's never gone.
Oh, I totally agree. Nothing's ever wasted, is it? Nothing one learns or does or acquires, it just comes full circle and you use it as time goes on. Well, it's time for a break. So after these ads, we'll be back. I'll be back with Esme talking more about her art and her childhood and the beautiful West Wight and indeed the whole of the Isle of Wight. So please stay tuned and speak to you in a moment. Okay.
This is Vectus Radio.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, artist Esme Ballard. Welcome back, Esme.
Thank you, Joan.
Hi, and just before the break there, we were waxing lyrical about the West Wight and Freshwater Bay, and you're lucky enough to have made that area your home.
Yes, indeed. We came on holidays over many years, perhaps 8 or 9, I think, before we bought our present home. But we just fell in love with the island. David hadn't been before, but I had, even to Freshwater Bay. I visited on a holiday I had with my parents in 1982.
Oh,
so
lovely.
It's funny digging out the old photographs. And we got one my father took of myself and my mother with one of the buses at that time, so it's quite unmistakable. I can see where the bus was, but that was before I was even married, so isn't life strange,
isn't it? And you had obviously no way of knowing at that point in time that this is where you're going to settle and spend really special times here with David and make a new career really with your art.
Yes.
And you've even, I've been to your home and it's very beautiful, but you've got a lovely little self-catering holiday let there, haven't you?
We do, yes. It's very secluded, not overlooked at all, at the back of our property in the square at Freshwater Bay. It's called Rabbit's Bothy.
Lovely. So that's a delightful name. Where did that come from?
Well, it's like, it's really a Scottish term. It's like a little bolt hole that you can hide away in. And we do say that the accommodation there, which we've had people from all over the world to stay with us, is perfect for two. So although we do have a sofa bed and we have had three people, it's ideal for two adults, and that we have the one bedroom and then we have a sofa bed in quite a large lounge, and then that has a little kitchen off it. So people have been very comfortable there. It's got a very slightly old-fashioned feel about it, as though you're going back into the past. And it's got a lovely garden, beautiful vine grows all round the veranda, which faces west, so you can sit there drinking your G&Ts as the sun goes down.
And that really is just a stone's throw from the bay, isn't it? From
Oh, yes, it's just 5 minutes walk down to the bay, which was partly why we chose it. We wanted to be able to say that we were very close to the most wonderful walking experience, the beauty of the bay, but also if people want a bit of culture, they can nip across the road and visit Dimbleur Museum and Art Gallery, which is the home of the Victorian pioneer portrait photographer Julia Margaret Cameron. And that has a lovely tea room and excellent exhibitions about her life and work, and indeed contemporary photographers' work.
And you've got the lovely walk up to Tennyson Down, and you can get to the Needles there. You can access the whole of the West Wight, can't you? In Colwell Bay, Tottenham Bay, which is just beautiful. And as you were saying before the break, for those who have just joined us, Newtown Creek, which is a particularly magical place, isn't it?
It is. Very special.
Very, and we forgot to say there's a lovely bird hide there.
Yes.
So if there's any twitchers listening, it really is a haven, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, talking about bird hides, that reminded me very much of the beautiful flat walk from Freshwater Causeway all the way to Yarmouth, which is something I often do. And there's a lovely bird hide there in Mill Copse.
Okay.
Mill Copse is also beautiful for bluebells.
So where is that, Esme? Where's Mill Copse?
It's very near the lovely Cafe Bistro Off the Rails, mm-hmm. which I can certainly recommend. So if you walk along the railway, just before you, if you were to branch left in front of the old mill that belonged to the family of the historian A.G.P. Taylor, it's just before you take that turn. It has got a finger mark to it. Okay. So it's on the right, and you see the little large pond with in front of the bird hide in the copse there.
Oh, that's a new one on me. It's always lovely, just when you think you know the island, somebody will tell you some very secret, special place, and then it's not secret. It's still special, but it's no longer secret.
No, well, we, in fact, went in recently because it was included in the walking festival's guided walks. We were lucky to see bluebells in there and orchids as well.
Now, the wild orchids,
yes.
Because they are very rare beasts, aren't they?
Yes.
So were you tempted to pick up your paintbrush and capture the bluebells?
Yes, but I'd captured them on camera just about 3 weeks before when we went to Mottiston. And in the woods beyond Mottiston Manor, that's National Trust Estate, they were absolutely magnificent this year.
I think they've spread, haven't they? There's more there than ever.
Yes, a really good year, I suppose, due to weather conditions. But it's just a carpet of most beautiful wild bluebells and silver birch trees and other trees, indeed, rising out of them. That's really inspired me. So that's the painting I'm working on at the minute.
Oh, lovely. So another 20 hours later, and that'll be complete.
Yeah, well, not quite there. I think I'm nearly there with it. It's reaching the point where don't go too far.
Lovely. Oh, I can't wait to see that one.
And I've also, actually, you asked me what else I've done. I was inspired by the mill that we just mentioned at Yarmouth. It's the most distinctive building, dating from about the year 1800 or very late 18th century. And I have done a painting with very dramatic skies. And that's a lovely view. That's looking towards the town of Yarmouth.
I was talking to someone who'd been in there, because I think they let part of that, or have done,
they
holiday
do.
Lets. Yeah.
Yes.
And they were saying how all the floors are completely uneven and all the rooms are different sizes. It sounds magical in there.
Yes. Really
have you
charming.
Ever been in? Have you ever been
no,
in?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Yeah. Do you take commissions, Esme? I was just wondering if anybody listening might think, oh, you know, I'd love a picture of my house or my dog or myself, you know, or is that not your kind of thing?
No, I don't think I'm expert enough on the architectural side at the moment. So I would just say to people, why not have a trip down to Ventnor Botanic Gardens? It's a nice place. And also the echiums are at their peak at the moment. Those incredible plumed plants that are about 20 foot high.
Oh, yes. They're like great light swords, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes. That's a good term for
they're
it.
They're really prehistoric.
Yes.
And they're just incredible beasts of plants, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, yes. I perhaps didn't explain why my pictures happened to be there, but I strayed out of the West White officially, and I did two paintings of the gardens themselves, which have been admired. Again, there's a lot of strength features of trees to a large extent, and various flowering shrubs and so on. So I enjoyed those. And another artist I've got to know did say to me, your love of trees really comes over, Esme. So it's not just scenery in general, but it's kind of through the paintwork showing a kind of loving attention to the beauty in nature.
Yes, and I think in order to make that, you've got to feel passionately, haven't you, about your subject, I would imagine, in order to portray it at its fullest and best.
Yes, yes, and that does come. I go back to this point about looking. So that's what's so marvellous. And if anybody thinks, oh, I can't paint, I can't draw, I'd say, have a go. You can buy little books that say, how to produce a watercolour in just 10 minutes. And anybody can have a go. Have a go. You don't know, that talent may be there. Get out in the countryside and just have a little box of paints with you, and you can be richly rewarded, I would say, by the experience.
And you can interpret the landscape. It doesn't have to be a sort of absolute picture-perfect photographic in reconstruction, does it? It can just be very abstract as well, if that's what people are more confident with.
And I learned early on, you know, don't be a perfectionist about it. Learn that it might not be 100% right the first time, but be patient, because it's like a lot of things in life. The more you work at it, the better it will become in time.
Indeed, indeed. But it's, I think, the one of the key things, going back to what you said earlier, it's also about the amount of enjoyment you get from it, isn't it?
Because yes.
Unless you enjoy it, there's no point in doing it, really. I mean, so that therapeutic enjoyment and the slow pace, like you say, you're a very patient person, so being able to give it time and just come back to it and revisit it, that's part of the process, isn't it?
It is, yes. I think it's also very good for your mental health.
I mean,
you're probably aware of this fashion now for colouring books. But I'd say, well, if you've not done that, you'd like to do it, why not?
Absolutely.
Have a go. Because it's very soothing.
And there's really no wrong or right to the art one produces, is there? Because it's your work, it's your interpretation, it's your heart and soul that's gone into it.
Definitely.
So there can't be any wrong and there can't be any right up to a point. You know, I know there's perspective, and I know, you know, perhaps a lot of artists would disagree with me, but if you just want to get out there and enjoy yourself and do it, like you said, for the therapeutic properties of it, go ahead.
I'd agree, absolutely. And a professional artist said to me once, there's no point in trying to produce a work that is, in fact, just like a photograph, because, you know, what's the point of that? And watercolour is not the easiest of techniques. You can't easily change it if you've gone wrong, but it does have that fluidity. And of course, some people are far more advanced than myself, particularly in the use of the washes, letting the colours run into. I'm always learning by. I like to watch and see what other people are doing, and can just keep trying, keep practicing these different techniques.
Yeah, I would imagine you're a tutor's dream pupil, really, because you are so willing to give of yourself, and you, like you say, you're willing to make mistakes and learn and keep moving on with everything, rather than just thinking, well, this is okay, this will do.
Well, that's true.
Did you get a lot of encouragement from your family? Because you said earlier that painting's in your blood. So I presume you had a very supportive family, and they would, you know, try and encourage these talents of yours.
Yes, that is true. Especially my father, who was also very happy to, and did introduce me to museums and galleries in London at quite a small age. And we used to go off together looking at all the different buildings and palaces and museums, in London especially, where he'd grown up.
What was your favourite one? What was your favourite trip with your father to that sort of museum?
Well, I think it has to be the National Gallery, because there is just the top paintings, really, that this country owns are there. And they had some excellent examples going right up from the early Flemish painters, and later I was lucky enough to go to Belgium particularly and see works by, I suppose the most famous one is Jan van Eyck. In the National Gallery there is the Arnolfini marriage portrait that may be known to some of your listeners. And what appeals to me particularly about that painting is just the incredible level of detail, the realism and attention to detail, and also the fantastic colours. And it was these early Flemish painters, before the Renaissance artist Raphael in particular, that led to the group of artists in the 19th century who called themselves pre-Raphaelites, to pick up this intense use of colour. I mean, watercolours, some people think, oh, they're a bit wishy-washy, but they don't have to be. I think people in recent years are much more adventurous with the use of colour in watercolours.
And you've just taken me back to a real moment in my life. And I wasn't taken to galleries as a child, and I was in adulthood. I was working in advertising. I wasn't having the kind of best of times. I was feeling pretty low, to be honest with you. And a very good friend of mine, he took me to a gallery, and I thought, you know, this is an anathema to me. I really don't want to go. I can't think of anything more boring. No, thank you. But we didn't have any money at the time, and it was free to get in those days. So off we trotted, and he said, "You're coming with me, and I'm sure you're going to love it." And after I sort of dug my heels in on the threshold, once we got in there, honestly, Esme, it was, and that was the National Gallery, it was one of the most, eye-popping, eye-opening experiences of my life. And I came out after probably an hour or so, my spirits completely lifted, my eyes totally opened. And that's always been a wonderful thing for me to, you know, that kind of release and escape. And it's there for everybody, isn't it? I think perhaps there is still that notion in some people's heads that it's not for them, and they haven't been brought up around in that kind of environment. But actually go in, and most pieces of art just relate to the human condition, don't they? There's always something. It's not above people's heads, is what I'm trying to say. It's accessible to everyone, really, because it talks to different people on different levels. About everything.
Yes,
in
I mean, art is not just about landscapes, as you know. I mean, often you can have figurative scenes, you can have the wonderful sort of Dutch interiors, the wonderful insight into human nature that's personified perhaps better than any other artist by Rembrandt.
And I would say to people, you know, go in and see, no matter what your preconceived perceptions might be of a gallery or a particular artist. Just go in with an open mind and see what happens.
Yes, because there's also nothing quite as good as seeing the original.
Absolutely.
I mean, we all see prints in shops and
birthday
galleries. We've seen the images, and the impressionists, of course, have a very, very wide appeal. But there's nothing quite seeing the real thing.
There's a wonderful painting in Mottiston Manor, and they're open, which is it's in Mottiston, obviously, which is near Brook on the island, and they're open one day a year. And I got to see this wonderful painting of the original war horse that's there, and I don't know if you've been fortunate enough to see it. Well, I'm not horsey at all. In fact, I'm allergic to them. But it was just an astoundingly beautiful portrait, and I stood there and burst into tears. I mean, I wasn't even expecting to see a painting of a horse. I was just expecting to look round a house. But it just moved me. And I suppose what that horse had been through, and just the magnificence of the actual painting itself. And it's quite astounding how those things can reach out and touch you, isn't it?
That's very true, yes. Yes, I have been there and seen it. And it's probably a bit like the fact that the artist is focusing so much on the horse that artist, whoever they were, has had to look at that horse incredibly carefully and think about the pose, you know, the stance of it, and the use of colour in particular. And it's like, moved you so much, Joan, it must have been almost like doing a portrait of a human being, that you've
indeed
got to try and bring out not just the physical external appearance, but try and capture something of the soul of
absolutely
this creature.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was very intense, the painting, and it was,
yes,
like I say, very regal, I suppose, but it was just beautiful. It's stunning. So I'd urge anybody on the one day a year that Mottiston Manor is open to try and get around then, just to have a look at that painting, whether you like horses or not.
Definitely. Yes.
But
yes.
No, and when you go to, you know, if I was lucky enough to go to Paris and see the Monets and the Impressionists and the water lilies, and again, we think we know them, we think we've seen them 100 times, perhaps on TV, like I said earlier, birthday cards. If you go down to that room and they're all of these huge, huge pieces of artwork, and they are just wonderful, aren't they? They just transport you and give you this wonderful lift.
That's right, yes.
But even, I mean, I went to see Tracy Emin exhibition, and a lot of people, obviously, I think Tracy Emin is very Marmite, to use that overused phrase, but you're either perhaps lover or hater. And I went really not knowing what I thought. I thought it'd be very interesting. Let's go and see. And her work is very raw, obviously, but it spoke to me so much of sort of the female condition and what we go through and what we endure as women. And I just thought it was incredible. Yet I've spoke to other girlfriends who I didn't like it at all, was very dismissive and derisive of it. But again, it gets one talking, it gets these issues out there, doesn't it?
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that
gets you thinking.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
So in terms of, obviously, like you say, you work in the medium of watercolour. Is it watercolour and pen, some of them?
Pardon?
Is it watercolour and pen, watercolour and ink you use?
Yes, sometimes.
Yes.
Pen and ink study initially. Yeah. I certainly did one of Freshwater Bay is like that, one of the six prints that I have available at Ventnor and at the Guildhall. But mainly it's pencil and then the watercolour washes. But my father painted mainly in oils, and it was his uncle, my great-uncle, who I do remember as a child, who painted in both watercolours and oils. And he concentrated on landscapes to a large extent. And a number of his paintings, in fact, had been in my parents' attic and were only discovered fairly recently. And I was amazed to find here, lo and behold, that I knew nothing about was an oil painting of the courtyard of Carisbrooke Castle.
Oh, how fantastic.
So that was another surprise, because it wasn't one that had been hung in, you know, my grandparents' or my parents' house.
How amazing is that?
Yes.
So, I mean, you really have been the product almost, and you've been of your parents and so influenced by your family, haven't you? From the museum work to the painting and these artistic talents. It's just ingrained in you, isn't it, really?
Yes, but it's curious, these different threads in life, isn't it? Mm. Like you touched earlier on me never knowing I would meet my husband David, having been to the island before I was married. And then also this connection with my great-uncle, who I didn't know had been here either. So life is quite strange in a way, but I definitely feel the passion for sketching and painting is in my blood.
Mm.
Although David and I do have many other interests, and we are very keen on all kinds of different music. We share that interest, including opera. You were talking earlier about art being rarefied, and I thought, gosh, you know, my other passion, some people, unless they've given it a go. And now there's far more opportunities than there ever used to be with, you know, broadcast films of operas and so on. I mean, we do go to the Ventnor Arts Club,
yes,
in the restored bank for that. And we go as far as Sandown. There's a lovely new cafe called the Gaslight Cafe at Sandown Railway Station. If you went in the daytime, you might feel, oh, well, this is a little cafe on station, and not think twice about it. But if you were to go to one of the exclusive evenings, tickets are snapped up immediately. You can have a lovely meal there with the most talented musicians on the island. Absolutely fantastic.
What sort of music would you get to hear there?
Well, it's sort of, it might be ukuleles or jazz, folk generally, but
so
different people.
It's quite a mixed bag.
It's quite mixed. They have different guest people, so it's not always the same group, but it's a range of people, a range of ages. I know the youngest, Mark Thomas, is only 20, and he's been playing for 10 years, so he's very experienced and probably well known to many people. JC of JC and Angelina,
yes.
Again, beautiful music that's he is so talented.
I think it's about getting out off the sofa and experiencing something different, even if every sort of bone in your body and nerve in your spine is saying, no, this is not for me. It's just saying, let's give it a try. And then you know whether it's for you. It's like the old Guinness saying, isn't it? I don't like it, I know, but I've never tried it, but I know I don't like it.
And then if you want to pull the two together, the question, music and art, of course, the obvious place is Key Arts, which is just exploded with that creative activity since it's had the new manager, Paul Armfield. And it's truly wonderful, the range of things that are happening. Something is happening there almost every day.
Well, and they've spoken word, isn't there? There's film, like you say, there's art.
Yes.
There's a huge amount of creativity.
A terrific offer. And, of course, it's a lovely, relaxing place to be. There's changing art exhibitions, but there's also art in the cafe area. You have lovely meals there. So if anybody hasn't stepped into Key Arts, goodness me, please go.
And there's 20, but usually about 20 swans in the river right beside the cafe.
Yes,
there.
Isn't that a lovely sight? It's beautiful.
Stunning.
Yes.
Yeah,
I don't know now the weather's better, you can have your refreshments out on the veranda there, right over the river.
I have to say, you're not in their pay, are you, SB? You're not the dude PR for the Key Arts.
No, but anything that's good.
Yes.
I like to speak up on its behalf. I know they do have a scheme for key holders if you want to be particularly help them out, and they do need as much help as they can get. But I go there regularly to all sorts of things, and
they've got
I just love it.
Nice shop there as well, haven't they? That sells all sorts of
beautiful
jewellery.
Top quality designers on the island, who again we should be supporting. So some lovely ceramic things and jewellery in particular,
really unique pieces for gifts and special souvenirs of the island. Yeah, one of the pieces really absolutely lovely.
Yes.
And there's some gorgeous architect opposite there, isn't there? There's Seal House, that whole row of houses directly in front, absolutely beautiful. So before you turn and enter the shop, just sort of take a minute to look at that row of houses there, because they're gorgeous, aren't they? I think
they are
Georgian,
yes.
Possibly
they are,
yes.
Definitely. But I mean, I find the whole of Newport, actually, from the architectural point of view, absolutely fascinating. So maybe, you never know, one day perhaps I might have the courage to do more in terms of buildings. But it's probably more exacting in terms of getting the perspective absolutely right if you branch off into that area.
Yes.
So there we are.
I think your heart and soul, though, is very much with the heart and soul of the island, which is the scenery, isn't it? And nature. That, to me, is where you blossom, where your work where you shine through, isn't it? Because, as I said, your work to me evokes
tranquility. Right. Yes,
very pastoral.
Yes, it was the West White that my husband and I fell in love with. Mm. So that's where we knew pretty quickly that's where we wanted to live.
To settle. Lovely.
Although I actually grew up in Worcestershire.
Yes, so how long have you been on the island?
6 years now.
And, and you'd never move?
No, not from our present home.
Good.
No, so.
And just to remind people, because we are clearly nearly all out of time, Esme, which is just flown by as ever. What's your website? Where can people see this work?
On the website for our little self-catering cottage at the back of our house. So that's Rabbits Bothy, RABBITSBOTHIE.co.uk.
Brilliant. Okay, so there's full details of the holiday let, if anybody's interested in that, and your lovely paintings.
There is indeed, yes.
Super, lovely. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Esme.
It's been lovely for me too. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you for your time. And thank you for listening. And do please follow us on Twitter at Vectus Radio and on Facebook. And any youngsters out there thinking about a career in broadcasting, or just interested in getting a few skills to build your confidence if you're on the route to job interviews, how about looking into our Vectus Radio Training School? And full details are at www.4ps.org.uk. And that's all from me today. Just remains to say, please join me again next week, when my guest will be Reg Hunt. And Reg works closely with the British Legion and is a charity fundraiser extraordinaire, also an ex-policeman who met the Pope. So lots of stories from Reg at 1 o'clock next Friday. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now. www.vectusradio.com